Welcome to the Josh Scanlon Podcast. This episode first appeared as a video on my YouTube channel at youtube.com/heritagewealthplanning. I hope you find it informative. Thanks. Number three of the three most important articles you need to read as a consumer of financial planner, if not going to be firing your own financial planner and doing it yourself, or if you're going to go to the business to offer guidance as well. So either way, I talked about number one was Bill Bengen's 4% rule. That was incredibly informative back in the early 90s. Number two is Ty Bernicke's Reality Retirement Spending, another wonderful, wonderful tool that really changed the paradigm of how we look at financial planning, using income needs first as opposed to assets, what you have for assets. How much income do we need? And then we can put the two together. And this is going to be using your home equity and your assets, your entirety of your assets to incorporate in your financial plan as well. So let's dive right into this, my friends here at the Heritage Wealth Planning YouTube channel. Don't forget to smash. I got to come up with a different one. Now I'm so addicted to saying smash. Smash, share, and subscribe. All right. And then smash the like button, share, subscribe, comments. All right. Let's go into this one. So here's from the Journal for Financial Planning. What was this dated? Back in 2015, if I'm not mistaken. I don't see the date on here. I think it was 2015. By Barry Sachs and Stephen Sachs, PhDs, JD. I'm not sure who Peter Neuwirth is. I don't know who that is. But anyways, Journal of Financial Planning. What is this? Got a date on this thing? I don't remember. But anyway, I just came across this maybe a year ago, actually. And it really changed. But this is where I started looking at reverse mortgages, absolutely. And the premise of this, my friends, a lot of people just don't have that much in retirement savings. They just don't. Now, a lot of those same people who don't have that much in retirement savings do have home equity assets. That's for sure. The majority of people in retirement do not carry a mortgage. That's for sure, too. So what logically says, we got a lot of people don't have a mortgage. A lot of people don't have liquid net worth in retirement savings. Well, guess what? And they have equity. So why would we not use that equity as a form of retirement planning? I don't know. Now, I know there's lots of fears out there. That's fine. This isn't saying you should do it. But I think it opens up a whole different approach for people who are kind of thinking they're on the cusp if they can retire or not. All right. So let's go to the executive summary. I might split this up into two. Let me just get my thing out here because I think there's a lot to go into here, and I'll probably split up to two. All right. So 4:15. The paper examines the effect of using reverse mortgage credit lines to supplement retirement income by two types of retirees that have not been addressed in previous literature. Those who retirement savings are significantly below those of the mass affluent, and those are house rich, cash poor. Results of this analysis demonstrate an important contrast with results of the earlier literature, specifically the greater percentage of home value when coordinated with a retirement savings portfolio resulted in a substantially greater percentages of the portfolio that can be withdrawn. The paper suggests a new alternative to 4% rule that can guide planners and retirees towards optimal cash flow withdrawal strategy. This new rule takes into account the total of the retiree's retirement savings plus home value. The quantitative analysis of this paper uses the same spreadsheet models and strategies first presented in the journal back in 2012 by the Sachs brothers, and this paper builds on that work. Okay, so Stephen Sachs, PhD, is professor emeritus of economics at the University of Connecticut. He maintains an economics consulting practice in New York. All right, we got Barry Sachs, a JD, PhD, is a practicing tax attorney in San Francisco. I specialize in pension-related matters since 1973. And Neuwirth is an actuary with 38 years experience. Hey, Willis Towers Watson. Willis Towers Watson. Hey, cool. I know people who work there. I recently retired from there. He maintains an independent actual consulting practice. So obviously these guys got some academic chops behind them. All right. So using home equity to enhance retirement income is an emerging topic in the financial planning profession. Research on strategies for tapping home equity to boost the sustainability of retirement income drawn from securities portfolios is quite recent, though. The concept was first introduced in the JFP by Howard Evansky, which I tell you, Howard Evansky is a big deal in financial planning. Pfeiffer, I know who Pfeiffer is. Salter, Sachs, I don't know them, but I've read all their stuff, both of which focused on home equity access by reverse mortgage credit lines. I forgot the other lady out in Texas. I could have sworn there's a lady down there. I'm drawing a blank from Texas Tech. I can see her image right in my head. Anyway, let's see. All the previous literature examined model retirees whose ratio of home value to the value of their retirement savings was 1-2. Sachs and Pfau suggested expanding the research to retirees with different ratios. This paper followed that suggestion, broadening the range of retirees examined using two strategies. Like much of the existing literature on reverse mortgages, this paper uses the term reverse mortgage to mean home equity conversion mortgage. All right, so basically they're saying before we're examining model retirees whose ratio of home value to the value of the retirement savings was 1-2. So you had a $500,000 home, you got $1 million retirement account. $200,000 home, $400,000, you get that. Although the data on retirement savings and home equity have been amassed from a number of surveys, there's not much coherence among the data sets. Some data sets consolidate data from age 55 to 64, 65 to 74, while others focus on the age group 63 to 65. And data on retirement savings is often tracked separately from data on home equity, making it difficult to draw conclusions about the distribution of the combination of home equity and savings. Some attempts have been made to correlate and combine home equity and retirement and savings. For example, my man, Joe Tomlinson, drawn a blank Pfeiffer, and John Salter, I can't remember Pfeiffer's first name, showed retirement savings, home equity, and home values for married retirees aged 63 to 64 who had non-zero retirement savings. And they're going to show, and for you on the podcast, you can't see this, but basically what Tomlinson et al. Say is that percentage of retirement savings, married home median home equity, home value, and retirement savings by percentage of retirement savings. So percentage of retirement savings, if you had 50 to 74.9% of retirement savings and you're married with positive retirement savings age 63 to 65, your retirement savings was $383,000, your home equity was $200,000, and your home value was $295,000. So home equity as a percentage of home value is 68%. Mortgage debt as a percentage of home value is 32%, and home equity as a percentage of retirement savings was 52%. So again, you had, let's just say for simplicity, $400,000 retirement savings, and you had $200,000 of home equity. So your percentage of home equity to retirement savings in that case was about 50%. Your mortgage debt as a percentage of your home value was 32% on, this is the scenario. Now there's five different quintiles. I'll let you all look at it. I'll put a link in the show notes. If, as some economists project, the use of home equity for generating retirement income grows in prevalence in the coming years, I'm telling you, it's going to, this conjoint analysis of the total resources available to retirees will improve financial planners' understanding of the true state of retirement readiness of the population who will be retiring in the next 5 to 10 years. All right, as previously noted, it can be difficult to draw conclusions about the distributions of the combination of home equity and retirement savings from the existing data. Nonetheless, most segments of the population, from the mass affluent who fit the top quartile of table one, we'll talk about here in a second, to the almost affluent, home equity represents a significant component of total assets available. Rather than extend the analysis of Tomlinson, Pfeiffer, and Salter, this paper focused on four representative retirees and explored more deeply the reverse mortgage strategies that each type of retiree might use to meet their retirement income objectives. As part of that analysis, the following question was explored. Is there an optimal percentage of total retirement income resources that the broad range of retirees could withdraw each year that would maximize retirement income while minimizing the probability of exhausting all assets before the end of retirement? Let me pause there for a second because I'm drinking coffee. I put a Milky Way in there, a small one, pretty good. Remember, the whole point about retirement is make sure we don't run out of money. I mean, that's what it comes down to. Now, if you want to leave legacies, that's other things to do that. But if retirement, I just want to make sure I don't run out of money and become a burden to my children. Not using your home equity doesn't make sense to me. I mean, because it's there, especially if you're literally going to run out of money. In addition to the combination issue noted earlier, another complicating factor in the data is that about 20 to 30% of retirees have mortgages still outstanding on their homes when they retire. Because of the reduced home equity credit line available when a conventional mortgage is yet to pay off, the analysis presented here considered only those retirees who own their homes free and clear and whose value is consistent with the home equity values. However, the majority of retirees own their homes free and clear. That's huge. The majority of retirees own their homes free and clear. Therefore, the terms home value and home equity are synonymous with this paper. We are not talking people who don't have mortgages. Home equity and home value are synonymous because the majority of homeowners own their homes outright. You got to understand that. This is different for people who have a mortgage. I've done videos on reverse mortgages in that regard. We're not doing that here. As noted, Table 1, which I just talked about, shows median values of both retirement savings and the home equity. In order to better capture the range of financial situations among the population of retirees, as well as acute retirement income generation problems facing the retiree with significant home value but limited retirement savings, this study considered not only typical retirees, but also house-rich, cash-poor retirees. And they have a description of the four groups here. They got retiree number one, mass affluent. They have $400,000 of home equity and $800,000 in savings. Retiree number two, house rich, mass affluent. $800,000 of home equity and $400,000 of retirement savings. So we got a 1-to-2 ratio, home equity to retirement accounts. And then we got 2-to-1, home equity to retirement accounts. Number three, almost affluent retiree is $150,000 of mass and home equity and $300,000 of retirement savings. And then number four, $300,000 of home equity and $150,000 in retirement savings. Again, home equity is being used synonymously with not having a mortgage, just with your total home value that you don't have a mortgage. All right, so let's take a break here real quick. We'll do part two and talk about the different scenarios of these four people. So don't forget to subscribe, and I'll put the link up there in the show notes to continue on for part two of this. Thanks. All right, so going back to our article on home equity lines of credit, or I should say reverse mortgage lines of credit, and looking at the retiree number one, the mass affluent retiree. Again, the mass affluent has $400,000 of home equity and $800,000 of retirement savings. Retirement savings, of course, would be IRAs, 401ks, and whatnot. Retiree number one, the typical mass affluent retiree, has been defined as it discussed in existing literature. Sachs in 2012 considered a mass affluent with $417,000 home value at the outset of retirement and a portfolio of $800,000. Similarly, Salter, Pfeiffer, and Evensky considered a retiree of the home value of $250,000 in a portfolio savings of $500,000. Although these figures placed a hypothetical retiree at the low end of the mass affluent range, the ratio of home value to retirement savings is 1-to-2. Again, so, but we are going to use a different almost affluent retiree. So basically, Evensky and Salter, and then going back to Sachs and Sachs, they have two different scenarios. But either way, they got a 1-to-2 home equity to retirement savings ratio of that will. Okay. With the possible, the FAO reviewed a series of previous papers and the respective algorithms, considering a retiree with a home value of $500,000 and a $1 million retirement portfolio, again, replicating the 1-to-2 ratio, with the possible exception of certain areas on the West Coast and the Northeast where home values have climbed to extraordinary heights, these values likely would be typical of a mass affluent retiree. The results of this study indicate that in the typical case of the typical, the results of this study indicate that in the case of the typical mass affluent retiree, the probability of cash flow survival over a 30-year retirement would be at least 90% with an initial withdrawal rate of approximately 5% of the portfolio's initial value. Okay, so we're shooting for a 90% success rate where they don't run out of liquid net worth, and we're taking 5% of the portfolio initially. Thus, using the reverse mortgage credit line in either the simple algorithm referred to as coordinated strategy suggested by Sachs and Sachs, or the more complex algorithm referred to as standby line of credit suggested by Pfeiffer, Salter, and Evensky, we'll get into that, increased the initial withdrawal rate that had approximately a 90% probability of 30-year cash flow survival from Bengen's 4% rule with no use of home equity. So again, we're going from 4% to 5%. That's a 25% increase in your ability to take money out of your overall net worth as opposed to just liquid net worth, and yet you still maintain a 90% survival rate. By contrast, if the reverse mortgage was used only as a last resort and not in either of these algorithms, the increased ineffective safe withdrawal rate was negligible. Therefore, the typical mass retiree, the reverse mortgage credit line used in either algorithm resulted in a 25% increase in the retiree's inflation-adjusted retirement income throughout his 30-year retirement. A question that arises, and one that is explored for the remainder of this paper, is how and to what extent is the retirement income of the other three representative retirees affected by the use of one of those algorithm strategies. We'll get into that. All right, so retiree number two, the house-rich mass affluent retiree. And this person has $800,000 in home equity and $400,000 in portfolio value. Now, I just got to reiterate, home equity is the same as the fair market value of the home. None of these people have debt at all. That's a different topic for a different day. And I've done topics on that before. In this case, they have no debt. So $800,000 home equity is the exact same thing as $800,000 as their value of their home. This representative has a ratio of 2-1. So $2 in home equity for every $1 in portfolio assets. For this retiree, his or home value is substantially greater than the value of his retirement savings. Such a situation may have arisen because a retiree lives in a part of the country where exceptional increases in home value have occurred, or perhaps because of life choices resulting in buying a larger home at the expense of reduced retirement savings. Yep. The representative retiree does not appear to have been considered in any detail in the financial planning literature from previous studies. Therefore, the situation of this type of retiree is examined in quantitative detail in later sections of this paper. Retiree number three, the almost affluent retiree. Retiree number three is one who has a home value of $150,000 and $300,000 in portfolio. This representative retiree is not quite affluent, having total retirement income resources of $450,000. Moreover, it follows from table one that this retiree is not quite typical because he or she has retirement savings greater than his home value, whereas a table and other data indicate that most retirees, especially those with retirement income resources in the middle of the economic spectrum, have retirement savings that are less than the home value. I'm telling you, that is most retirees, especially those in the mid-range of retirement planning in terms of assets, have retirement savings that are less than their home values, which is why not looking at reverse mortgages boggles the mind. It is worth noting and relevant to the calculations set out in the later portion of this paper that the ratio of home value to retirement savings, 1-2, is the same for the retirees as the before, where we did $400,000 in home and $800,000 retirement savings. Finally, retiree number four, the house-rich, almost affluent retiree has $300,000 of home value and $150,000 of retirement portfolio. Okay, so that's a 2-1 ratio. All right, so we got, again, we just went through those four scenarios. Let's keep going because it's important. All right, assumptions of background. Retirees have several major economic concerns, most notably, one, inflation-adjusted cash flow, survival through retirement. Number two, additional cash availability in the event of an emergency or an unanticipated need. And number three, legacy. Cash flow. Cash flow survival is defined here as a 90% or greater probability that cash flow to the retiree will continue for at least 30 years following the outset of retirement. The measure of cash flow itself is expressed in terms of an initial withdrawal rate. Typically, this rate has been defined as a percentage of the value of the retirement savings at the outset of retirement, the 4% rule. Fowle examined several more nuanced approaches to the 4% rule, in which he said it might be too high or too low. Other people have as well. Some say 3.2, some say 5. I default to 5, but still, at the end of the day, 4% rule is a good starting point. The results presented here express the initial distribution rate in the traditional way so that comparisons can be made to the 4% rule. But these results also indicating that expressing the initial withdrawal rate as a fraction of total retirement income resources may be more useful and more broadly applicable. As shown below, in the context of investment returns consistent with historical averages, a rule of 30, where the initial distribution rate is 1/30 of the total retirement income sources, including home value, provides a more stable and consistent retirement income strategy of across various assets classes of retirees. So rule of 30. So we have $30 in total assets, and we take $1 of that out. That right there is 1/30, which means it gives us a total retirement income, which provides more stable and consistent retirement income strategy with less likelihood of running out of money, by the way. The reverse mortgage growing line of credit. Also important to the analysis is the growing line of credit. A majority of the roughly 1 million reverse mortgage loans currently outstanding are home equity conversion mortgages. A unique feature of that is that when some or all the loan proceeds are taken in form of the line of credit, the amount available to be taken continues to grow over time. After the credit line is established, the amount available to take in grows at the same rate as the interest applicable to the amount that is actually taken. The amount available when a reverse mortgage is established depends on the age of the borrower at the time and is greater for the older borrower than for a younger. However, the increment as a function of age is substantially smaller than the increment that results from these early established, followed by the increase resulting from the application of interest rates. I talked a lot about that. Just so a lot of people say, I'm not going to take a reverse mortgage until I get older. I guess fear of the expenses or something like that. And that's not the way to go. You want to take the reverse mortgage on the front end to get that compounding growth, the line of credit that grows and grows and grows. The longer you wait, yes, you'll get more on the front end relative to what you could at 62. So if you're 80, you'll get more relative to what you could at 62. But if you're 80 and just doing your home equity line of credit at that point, what you could have got at 62 will probably dwarf what you could get at 80. And I did other videos on that. So just make sure you type in my playlist on reverse mortgages. The effect of the home equity reverse mortgage interest-based increase in the amount available is important in enabling a retiree to have cash available throughout the 30-year retirement. Moreover, at this time, reverse mortgages other than home equity conversion mortgages are not available as credit lines. So that's all we got. I'm just using reverse mortgage and home equity conversion mortgage as the same thing, synonymously. Another important aspect of the reverse mortgage is a non-recourse feature. I cannot say this enough, and I don't know how else I could be clear on this. Non-recourse simply means regardless of the duration for which the credit line is in place and growing, the FHA guarantees that the retiree will never have to pay back more than the value of the home. For many retirees, this guarantee, when combined with a growing line of credit, may be significant. You don't have to pay. You don't owe more than the home is worth. You just don't. It's just, you don't. I don't know how else to say this. You don't. Your kids won't. Two specific aspects of reverse mortgage credit lines affect a quantitative analysis. They are amount available to establish the reverse mortgage line of credit and the cost of the reverse mortgage credit line. The amount of credit line initially available is a function of the age of the borrower at the establishment of the credit line and the prevailing interest rate. In this analysis, the borrower was assumed to be 65 years old. The prevailing expected rate at the time of this writing, in May 2017, meant that the amount initially available was approximately 54% of the home value. The Monte Carlo simulation program determined the amount available at later ages for the spreadsheets. We'll talk about that here. Other than approximately $125 for mandatory counseling session, there are no out-of-pocket costs for establishing or maintaining a reverse mortgage line of credit. The costs for establishing a reverse mortgage itself are included in three parts, all of which become part of the debt. These amounts can be negotiated with the lender to be brought down from a high of approximately $12,000 to near zero in exchange for higher ongoing interest rates. Right there, in exchange for higher ongoing interest rates. The calculations in this analysis use fees of $7,500 comprised of the $3,000 for the mortgage insurance premium, as what HUD makes you pay, plus $3,000 origination fee. Calculate as the averages of the figure on the, on the mortgage professor website, never heard that, plus $1,500 in closing costs. So total $7,500 in closing costs, $3,000 for the mortgage premium, is what you have to pay for HUD, $3,000 origination fee to the bank, and $1,500 in closing costs. So that's going to be $7,500. Let me take pause for just a second. The analysis, the analytical technique used here is similar to that used by Saxon in 2012. All right. A spreadsheet model using the following input parameters: initial value of the retirement savings portfolio, initial value of the retiree's home, and the initial withdrawal rate. The model used two worksheets run simultaneously. The two worksheets were identical in all aspects, including investment performance, inflation, the amount drawn by the retiree, except for the strategy used to determine whether retirement income was drawn from the portfolio or the reverse mortgage line of credit was used. On each worksheet, the calculations of investment gain or loss and of retirement income withdrawal were performed for each 30-year time frame. The investment gain or loss was determined stochastically, as was the inflation adjustment to the withdrawal amount. The 30-year calculation was repeated 10,000 times. In a certain number of those repetitions, the cash flow survived for 30 years, and in other repetitions, it did not. The three most significant determinants for cash flow survival are the initial withdrawal rate, the sequence of investment returns, and the strategy for dealing with negative returns. Remember, the three most important things: how much you're starting to take out, the sequence of investment terms, and when you have negative returns, what do you do with it? In each of these 10,000 repetitions, the initial withdrawal rate was the same and the average investment return was the same, but the sequence of investment returns being randomly selected was not the same in each. A simple count was made of cash flow survival over 10,000 trials. The percentage of repetitions in the cash flow survived was termed cash flow survival probability. The primary, okay, so let's see. The assumed portfolio, 60% equities, 40% bonds. So 6% equity, of which 40% with the S&P 500, 10% with small cap, and 10% international. 40% bonds, which is 10% in government bond index, 15% intermediate government bond index, and 15% in one-year treasury bonds. Let's see here. And it's rebalanced every year. As indicated previously, the primary financial objective of many retirees, especially those in house-rich categories, was assumed for the analysis to be inflation-adjusted cash flow that could survive for 30 years. The model for the analysis was that in the first year of retirement, a certain amount of withdrawn was withdrawn, and each subsequent year's withdrawal was equal to the previous year's withdrawal, adjusted only for inflation, going back to 4% the initial time, then we're going to adjust to 3% for inflation each year thereafter. Thus, the annual withdrawals provided constant purchasing power throughout retirement. Following the well-established convention, the initial withdrawal rate was expressed as a percentage of the initial portfolio value. All right, so strategy number one, establish a reverse mortgage line of credit at the outset of retirement. At the beginning of the first year of retirement, the first year's draw is taken from the portfolio. The amount of the draw is equal to 1 over 30 of the total retirement income resources, or 1 over 34 if conservative projections of investment returns are used. At the end of each year, the investment performance of the portfolio during that year is determined. If the performance was positive, the ensuing year's income is withdrawn from the portfolio. If the portfolio was negative, the ensuing year was drawn from the reverse mortgage line of credit. This is called a coordinated strategy. So markets are up, we're taking our next year's income from the markets. Markets are down, we're taking our next year's income from the reverse mortgage line of credit. Strategy two, from the outset of retirement, withdraw retirement income only from the portfolio. Do not establish a reverse mortgage line of credit unless and until the portfolio is depleted. From and after that point, the only source of retirement income is the credit line. That is the last resort strategy is established before. We say, hey, I'll do a reverse mortgage line of credit, but only when I have run out of money. Figure one and two demonstrate the dramatic increase of cash flow survival probability strategy of the first over number two. And this is nuts. So you won't be able to see this on the podcast, but look, comparison of cash flow survival probability strategies for two retirees with equal treatment. So retiree number one, mass affluent, and they had $400,000 in home equity and $800,000 in retirement accounts. And here is strategy one. They had a 90% probability rate. Again, they were taking 5% initially out of the portfolio. So they had $800,000 in the portfolio, which is $40,000 a year. We're adjusting with inflation. All right, so doing that and initial portfolio value of $800,000, 5% initial withdrawal rate, and $40,000 was a 1 over 30. So what's going on here is we're saying we need $40,000 today and $40,000 adjusted each and every year thereafter. If the portfolio goes down in value the previous year, we take that equivalent of $40,000 from the home equity line of credit. As the portfolio goes up the previous year, we take that $40,000 equivalent from the portfolio. And it has a 90% success rate. Strategy two, we're just establishing the home equity line of credit, the reverse mortgage line of credit, as a last resort, only had like a 76% success rate. A retiree two is house rich, investment poor. In this case, we got $800,000 of equity and only $400,000 in the portfolio. So in this case, the initial portfolio value, in this case, we're taking 8.6% initial withdrawal rate of, yeah, so let me take it here. We're taking $34,500 from the portfolio of the initial, and we're going to take it again from which, in this case, we have two things going on. If the portfolio, strategy number one, same thing, the portfolio does well, we take the money from there. Strategy number one, the portfolio does poorly, we take it from the home equity line of credit. Strategy number two, the portfolio does well or bad, we take it from there until it's exhausted, then we tap into the home equity. And what you'll see here is that there's only a 28% or so likelihood of survival by taking $34,000 a year from the portfolio on a $400,000 initial portfolio value. Hope that makes sense. But again, the survival rate just drops off a cliff because we're going to run out of money. No other way around that, because you only have $400,000 in there and you're taking $34,000 out, which again is 1 over 30. So that's the same amount right there. Now, it will be a little bit less tax, but because you're not taking as much out, but still. All right, so now we got the cash flow for almost affluent. So in this case, we got survival rate for the people who establish a home equity line of credit. And again, they have $300,000 in retirement assets and $150,000 in equity, and they're taking 1/30. So again, that is a 15% distribution, because that's our total equity. Our total net worth is $450,000. We're taking 1/30 of that $450,000, or $15,000 a year. And the same strategy. So strategy number one, we're establishing the home equity line of credit on the front end and using it when the markets go down. And the same exact thing happens on the second. If you have a house, almost affluent retiree with $300,000 home value and $150,000 in the portfolio, the person who uses a home equity line of credit as a last resort is in a world of hurt. No other way around that. Key findings: broad range of retirees, an effective coordinated approach to drawing upon retirement income resources can be used across a broad range of retirees, both in terms of the total retirement income and in terms of the ratio of their home value to the initial value of the retirement savings. And they just go through a bunch of different things here, and I'm not going to read it too much to you, but basically what we're saying is four different retirees, again, $400,000 in portfolio, $800,000 in house, and $1.2 million is the total net worth, and switch them around, how much they can take under the rule of 4%. So if you have $400,000 in your portfolio and $800,000 in your home, you can take $16,000 from your portfolio. If you use it as a 1/30 rule, you can take $34,500 from your portfolio, which essentially gives you the 8.6% distribution rate relative to your portfolio, because you're tapping in your home equity line of credit, your home equity reverse mortgage. So instead of taking $16,000, we're just doing the 4% rule. We're taking more than twice that, because we're tapping into our home equity, which gives us a drawdown as a percentage of our total portfolio of 8.6%. But it's still only 1/30. So I don't even know what, I don't have my calculator, I don't even know what that is, but it's still much, much higher than what we do if we just did a 4%. And so we basically have $34,500 compared to $16,000, and we still have a 90% success rate. For any given amount of total retirement income resources, the dollar amount of an initial withdrawal was constant regardless of the ratio to retirement savings. The dollar amount of the initial withdrawal that resulted in approximately 90% probability of cash flow survival was the same as a broad range of ratios of home value to initial value. The dollar amount was determined as a fraction of the retiree's total retirement income sources. This finding resulted when the coordinated strategy was used for withdrawals, but not when the last resort. Again, last resort is I'm only going to tap into my home equity when I run out of money. They do a bunch of different other combinations here. We're saying, hey, your initial, let's see here. This is for the people who are mass affluent, where they have, or almost affluent, I should say, initial portfolio value of $175,000. You got home value of $275,000. Ratio of home value to portfolio is 1.57. Your initial distribution rate relative to your portfolio is 8.57, because you're taking out $15,000 a year if you use a 1/30 rule. So again, if you're taking 4% out on, you have a portfolio of $200,000, you're taking $8,000 a year. If you're taking 4% out, I mean, if you're taking 1/30 and you're throwing in your home value, you're taking, in this case, over $15,000 a year, and yet you still have a 90% chance of your money out, your assets outliving you. It's crazy. Now, if you got, again, if you're looking at ratio of home value to portfolio, in this case, we got a portfolio value of $275 and a home value of $175. You're going to take less out as initial distribution rate from your portfolio because you have more of a portfolio. It's just that simple. But if the majority of retirees have no debt on their home and they don't have that much saved, why would they not use their home equity as a source of income? I'm just showing you right now, if your portfolio value is 175 and you're 65 years old today, and you have a home value of 275, and you're going to go to a guy and say, how much can I take? He says 4% a year. That's not going to be that much. That's going to be less. That's going to be about $7,500. Whereas if you look at everything in their entirety, you could take out $15,000 and still have a 90% success rate of not run out of money. Now, this is, we can change the numbers on the investment scenarios, and they're just looking at historical ones. And Blanchett talks about other observations. If you have a lower projected returns on your investments, it still is going to benefit their home equity reverse mortgage. It's just no getting around that. Computations using the rule of 30 and those using the rule of 34 both resulted in dollar amounts for retirees number 2 and 4. Again, that's the folks who have more equity and less retirement portfolios. that were more than twice the amounts resulting from the safe withdrawal rate applicable when only securities were drawn upon. Even the retirees in number one and two, three, who had more portfolio than home equity, the rule of 30 and the rule of 34 both resulted in higher cash withdrawal rates that were more than 25% than the amounts that could be safely withdrawn just from the portfolio. In dollar terms and in percentage of income terms, these results are significant. For example, number four, who retirees with a 401k valued at $150,000, is likely to have Social Security as his or her primary source of retirement income. Assume that Social Security is $25,000. Using strategy number one, again, that's a strategy where you establish the home equity line of credit on the front end and use it when the markets go down. An initial withdrawal rate of 10% of the retirement account annually adjusted for inflation provided a 29% greater total cash flow throughout the 30-year retirement. All right, that's where I'm going to stop there. Lots more in here, and I'll let you read this. But I cannot stress this enough. This is a wonderful paper. I just, for the life of me, more and more people are going to retirement with not as much assets as they like for so a myriad bunch of reasons. But a lot of people still have home equity. And to only use 4% as your home, as a withdrawal and not consider your home, I just find it to be, I don't think that's right. I think you should look at your home equity. Absolutely. Now, obviously, you're going to pay fees on the front end. I don't deny that. You're going to leave a debt, most likely to your kids, and they'll have to sell the home or they'll have to pay off the debt if they want to retain the home. But how many kids actually want to retain their homes? I mean, I don't think that many. It might be different for your kids, but it is a non-recourse debt, which means you will never owe more than what the line of credit is, or what the home value is. Never, ever, ever. That's the nice thing about it. And that's the $3,000 on the front end of the fees, is that you'll never, that you're paying that. So the HUD can make sure that if there is a fall in the market, that the FHA can make up the difference, but you don't have to. All right, so I'll put this in the show notes. This is number three. I hope you like this. As always, smash, share, and subscribe, and comment. We'll see you next time. Thanks, guys.